Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews. Hey, we talk anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Like every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Hey, Carlos, fantastic. We had another great week in golf. We're going to break down the Hall of Fame. Who's in, who's not. We got a lot of news to cover. You know, it might be getting cool outside, but the golf world is hot, hot, hot. Let's go.
It's very hot, and it keeps heating up, so maybe like the Earth's core. So we'll see what happens. But we have a lot to talk about. And as usual, we have our very important guest of the week, our VIG. We have two this week. We're going to have John Lee, President and CEO of the Legends Invitational Golf Tournament, and George Miller, who is the Executive VP of the Club Crown by Veeve. So let's start, as usual, with our Par 5 news. Fred always takes the tee shot. Fred, there's something that Michael Wan announced this week, so what is it all about?
Yeah, the LPGA Tour, they're not sitting still. Michael Wan keeps them going. He's got them headed down the right path. And he announced on Monday that Underwriters Laboratories would become the title sponsor for the International Crown in 2016 and 2018. The first International Crown, as we know, featuring teams made up of four of the best women golfers from each of the eight top-ranked countries in the world, was held at Caves Valley Golf Club near Baltimore, Maryland, last July. The team from Spain, comprised of Beatriz Sicaria, Azahara Munoz, Carlota Segunda, and Baylen Mozo, beat the heavily favored U.S. and Korean teams for the victory. Underwriters Laboratories served as an ambassador sponsor at that inaugural tournament. They were so impressed with the international team event that they decided to become the main sponsor. We at UL are very proud to extend our involvement with this one-of-a-kind international tournament in women's golf, said UL CEO Keith Williams. UL is a safety science company protecting people, products, and places for more than a century. UL's long-established history of championing innovation and the LPGA's rooted history in advancing leadership and competition makes us unique partners of global excellence. The 2016 UL International Crown will be held in September at Rich Harvest Farms in Sugar Grove, Illinois, and the 2018 event will be held in the Republic of Korea. The International Crown brings a Ryder Cup-like atmosphere to the women's game, and it, along with the Solheim Cup, brings new fans to the women's game from around the world. Real positive step for the International Crown and the LPGA Tour here, Carlos. Should really help get that event really rolling. And, of course, with the Olympics coming in 2016, we're going to get to see a lot of women's team golf.
Wow, that's great. That's great news for the LPGA and the International Crown. So, Fred, hey, I got to tell you something, how the mighty have fallen, man. So much for keeping the faith. You remember 1946, right? It's a Wonderful Life, when George Bailey said to Mary, "What is it that you want, Mary? What do you want? You want the moon? Just say the word, and I'll throw a lasso around it and pull it down. Hey, that's a pretty good idea. I'll give you the moon, Mary." And Mary would reply, "I'll take it. Then what?" Well, it wasn't long ago that the deep-pocketed Middle Eastern tournament sponsors would promise Tiger Woods nothing short of the moon to bring his game and his fame to Abu Dhabi and Dubai. And he would say, "Yes, I'll take it. Then what?" Then he will take off. He will just miss the cut and take the money and all that. But, hey, those days are over. The organizers of the UAE's two European Tour events are no longer willing to pay big fees in order to secure Tiger Woods' participation at next year's tournament. That is according to a report in The Telegraph. James Kerrigan writes that Woods, who hasn't won a major since 2008, is no longer compelling enough to command the type of appearance fees he's come to expect, And as a result, the 14-time major winner won't be starting in 2015 in the desert. The Telegraph also reports that the people behind the Abu Dhabi Championship, which opens the European Tour in January, and the Dubai Desert Classic will not pay the estimated $2 to $3 million appearance fee next year to Woods for the first time in 10 years. According to the report, the organizers are unwilling to pay large chunks of their budget to just one player, particularly as the 14 major winners' popularity has waned. Insider told the Telegraph, and I quote, "There are other players of big interest now, not least Rory McIlroy. In these market conditions, those prices, which does not represent the value he once did. In fairness, he has been there a lot of times, and the novelty has worn off." Okay, he finished 41st in Dubai this year and missed the cut in Abu Dhabi in 2013. So Woods' value, although it hasn't diminished elsewhere, however, as the Telegraph reports that he was due to receive $4 million for playing in America's Golf Cup in Buenos Aires this month and a further $4 million for playing in a 2-1-day corporate events in China. However, as you know, his recent injuries have curtailed his golf and will instead rest up before playing his own event in Florida in December. Last year, Qatar scrapped plans to bring the former world number one golfer to the Gulf State after he deemed his $3 million appearance fee was too expensive. You might remember Doha News reported last year in January that Hassan Al-Nuami, the president of the Qatar Golf Association, he said at a press conference, and I quote, "Tiger Woods demands $3 million just for an appearance. If he were to compete in the commercial bank Qatar Masters, which is not worth paying for a tournament, of $2.5 million of prize money." So Woods, hey, he's not in anymore. It's like, you know, Project Runway. One day you're in, the other day you're out. So he's out, and Rory McIlroy seems to want to be in, Fred.
Attention shoppers, we have Tiger Woods for sale in aisle 9, half off. Going fast, get there quick. Tiger's value is definitely on the downswing. Hey, Johnny Miller had some things to say about Tiger. He extended his TV deal with NBC, and then he talked about Tiger a little bit. Miller has been the lead golf analyst for NBC for 25 years. Yes, Carlos, we've been listening to the same old stuff for 25 years. Back to you, Roger. What do you think about that putt, Roger? How's that lie, Roger? NBC lost the USGA tournaments starting next year, and the network will not have as many tournaments to broadcast. That seems to be just fine with Miller. He's 67 years old and kind of looking to scale back. He was the tournament host at Silverado 2 weeks ago for thefries.com and appears to be ready to scale back his travel and work schedule. He did extend his deal through 2017 with NBC Sports with an option for one more year. That would end a year before the U.S. Open returns to Pebble Beach for the sixth time, and part of Miller wonders if there's a chance he can play some role on TV. It's bad enough not to be calling the shots at a U.S. Open, even worse when it's in Northern California, the roots of his Hall of Fame career. That would be tough to watch, Pebble or Olympic Club, and not be able to cover it, Miller said. For me, maybe not for other people, but Miller has annoyed plenty of people, mostly players, during his 25 years in the booth. That includes Woods. It's nothing personal. It rarely is with Miller. The nice part about his career is they started covering Woods at the U.S. Amateur as he was going to the National Junior, U.S. Junior Amateur, and his sons were in it. So he got to watch Tiger all the way up through the 90s and into the pros. And he was never more present than in a book he wrote 10 years ago, I Call the Shots, in debating both sides of whether Woods would surpass the 18 majors won by Jack Nicklaus. He wrote that book when Woods was still 28 years old and really in his prime. And, he just didn't think that Tiger was going to reach it. It's like as everybody gets older, the hole shrinks. You end up accumulating bits of scar tissue from small disappointments and putts that burn the edge and don't go in. And, he didn't think Tiger was going to make it back then. So Tiger or Miller knew that Woods would have to go through a downtime, and Woods has since 2008. He's not won a major. You know, personal problems, injuries, and all those kind of things have just built up. So, you know, Miller did go on to say it was a lot more fun watching when he was winning. I don't like to see him where he is. It's one thing to tail off. He still thinks he's young. He's an old 38. I hope I'm wrong, but he's been going hard at it since he was just out of diapers. Sort of like I did. He should have some good left in him. We forget he won five times in 2013. That seems like a long time ago. He's a real positive thinker. At least he is in front of you guys. So, and it's also in the news, Carlos, is that Tiger is taking full swings, appears to be getting ready. He's going to play in his World Challenge event in at the beginning of December. So, speaking about back to PGA Tour, I think you've got something to say about some of the golf courses, some of the stops on the PGA Tour that maybe you're getting a little facelift.
I do, but you know, facelifts are for the old people, right? I just wanted to add to the old thing that you said about when people get old and playing, you know, the whole shrinks, and you forgot to mention, you know, somehow, magically, old courses get bigger.
They do.
I don't know, longer.
They absolutely do.
They do. But, yeah, you're right. There are two PGA Tour top golf courses in the news for renovation. Let's start by the TPC Scottsdale that will reopen the stadium course, site of the PGA Tour's popular Waste Management Phoenix Open, for public on Friday, November the 14th. Following an extensive renovation led by original course architect Tom Weisskopf and his team, it was reported back in April, this year, that Weisskopf would be returning to the TPC Scottsdale for the project, which saw his team partner with Landscapes Unlimited to resurface all the greens and relocate selected greens, tees, and bunkers. Alterations to the course include strategic changes to all 18 holes. New greens locations at holes 2, 3, 4, and 14 has been introduced, while significant fairway and green complex modifications have been made to the 13th hole. Weisskopf said, and I quote, "The time had come to update the stadium course at TPC Scottsdale to provide a more modern and state-of-the-art tournament course for today's tour's players. These changes will also position the club to continue as the leader in the competitive Scottsdale resort and daily free market. Other enhancements to the course include new white sand in the bunkers and the removal of 250 trees for strategic and aesthetic purposes. The clubhouse renovation under the direction of architectural firm Allen and Philip of Scottsdale and general contractor Westpac Construction, Inc. of Phoenix includes additional locker room and meeting spaces and interior upgrades. So the stadium course will be rocking starting on Friday, November the 14th. The other course, hey, we have to talk about Torrey Pines North. You know, there was a major uproar about the proposed renovation of Torrey Pines North course when the entire San Diego City Council voted against the project back in 2005, especially after the South course was dramatically altered. Fast forward now 8 years, and especially after a hole-by-hole presentation of the renovated North and three meetings with the public, minds change. And now Mark Marney, the City of San Diego's golf course manager, said that the plans for a rework of the Torrey Pines North course in division off lefty Phil Mickelson remains on track. The project is still expected to start only days after the PGA Tour's Farmers Insurance Open that is contested in early February. The renovation is estimated to cost $7.8 million with a completion date of summer 2015. The changes are supposed to include a modernization of the greens and bunkers, which will make the course more playable for the average golfer. There will also be an elimination of 22 acres of plant material to create more natural terrain on the edges of the course. The 8th hole would become a par 5 with the green tucked closer to the canyon, while the 9th would be made into a long par 4. More proposed changes include creating a 2 short drivable par 4 holes at numbers 2 and 16, removing the 2 ponds on the par 3 17th hole, reintroducing a pine tree to the middle of the fairway on the par 5 14th. The original tree was deceased and had to be removed, and also reversing the 9th to create a more memorable finish. So talking about memorable finishes, I think somebody finished very well, a young man that ran into the Ohio State University football field for it.
Well, it really didn't end up very well for him, but he did finish, that's for sure. It's not often we can get a story that has a football as well as a golf connection. Have you seen the YouTube video of the young man running onto the field at Ohio Stadium during the OSU-Cincinnati football game on September 27th? A lot of people have. It went viral. Anthony Wonder, a 21-year-old mechanical engineering student, drew a much kinder response from a Columbus judge last week than he did on the field during the Cincinnati-Ohio State football game on September 27th. I made a mistake. It was very poor judgment, he said. That might be the understatement of the year, Carlos. Wonder's run across the gridiron ended when he was grabbed by former OSU linebacker Anthony Schlegel, now an assistant coach, who body slammed him and helped him, a security guard employee, drag him off the field. One video of the tackle has generated 7 million views on YouTube. He was charged with criminal trespass and fined $100 plus court costs, which is a relatively easy sentence, I would say. People in Columbus take their OSU football pretty seriously, and this was considered a terrorist attack by this young student. How does golf come into the equation, you may ask? Well, Wonder is attending OSU on an Evans scholarship. Evans scholars receive money from their golf club and the Western Golf Association's Evans Foundation to attend college. Evans scholars are golf caddies at their home clubs and are awarded fully paid tuition as well as room and board by the members of their courses. They have their own dorm and must adhere to certain regulations. Because of his conduct, whether or not he would continue to receive his scholarship became questionable. Because the court ruled his mistake a misdemeanor and not a more serious offense, Evans will not pull his scholarship and he can continue to attend OSU, but he must attend and complete a substance abuse program. Plus, I think everyone concerned felt that Wonder had been punished sufficiently when he was slammed to the stadium turf by the ex-OSU linebacker Schlegel. I'm guessing alcohol was involved in this little romp. I'm somewhat familiar with the young lad's exuberance. Thank God my OSU football tickets were always in C deck, and by the time I would have gotten down to the field, I'd have been too tired to run out on their field anyhow. So, Carlos, did you ever do anything in college that maybe you now regret?
This is not the show for that, so let's just go on with it.
What happens in college stays in college?
That is correct. That is correct. That's the statement. But I gotta say something. That wasn't a tackle. That was a slam. I mean, that was wrestling at its best. Okay, it was. I mean, I would get that coach and get him into the wrestling WWE or whatever he wants to get. And about Anthony Wonder, I don't know what he was wondering about, but he knows better right now. Hey, thanks.
That was a pretty dumb move.
Pretty dumb move. Hey, that wraps up our Power 5 news. Let's take a short break. When we come back, we have our VIGs of the week. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our VIGs of the week, very important guests of the week. We have two for you. We're going to start with John Lee, who is the president and CEO of the Legends Invitational Golf Tournament. Since he took over in 2010 from founders Curly and Sophie Morrison, the tournament is a four-day event, plays annually at the prestigious Pebble Beach courses, NFL greats and other sports legends join with corporate executives, doctors, lawyers, or entrepreneurs to make a five-man team playing over the Pebble Beach, Spanish Bay, and Spyglass courses over the spectacular Monterey coastline in California. During the evening events, they honor one of their celebrity sports captains for their outstanding career and lifetime achievements, and also holds live and silent auctions to raise money for the Navy SEAL Museum and the families. This year, Fred, on its 24th edition, is slated for November 14th through the 17th, and we have John Lee, the president and CEO of the tournament. So, Fred, lead us to this entry.
Carlos, you pretty much touched all the high points there. Had a chance to talk with Mr. Lee on the phone and get a quick interview. He talked about his history with the tournament and the good it does. It raises a lot of money for the SEALs and the Navy Museum. He really does a great job organizing this thing, and it sounds like a wonderful event out on the Monterey Peninsula, Spanish Bay, Pebble Beach, and Spyglass Hill. So, yeah, why don't you go ahead and roll it, and let's listen to Mr. Lee.
We are here today with John Lee, who's the president of the Legends Invitational and a member of the Navy SEAL Museum in Fort Pierce, Florida. Welcome, John, and tell us a little bit about the Navy SEAL Museum and the Legends Invitational.
Well, Fred, first, thank you very much. You know, I'm proud to serve on the board of the Navy SEAL Museum. It's located in Fort Pierce, Florida, which was where the Navy SEALs actually began, and as frogmen in the early 40s. And for not for the Navy SEALs, you would have not had a successful landing in Normandy. It's a fabulous museum. It's just a few minutes off 95, and I'd welcome anybody to come down, visit. I think you'll be thrilled, and I also know it's a very inspiring visit. Many ways to help the museum, if anyone would be kind enough to just go on NavySealMuseum.org or Google the Navy SEAL Museum, you'll see hours and hours of wonderful things to do and ways to help. I bought the Legends Invitational and the probably largest sponsor for the last 20 years. It's going to celebrate its 24th year this November 14th, and very few tournaments have that kind of a longevity. And what we did this year, since joining the board of the museum, was dedicate the event solely to benefit the Navy SEALs. For the first time in the history of Pebble Beach, we've got 7 SEALs and an admiral going to parachute into Spanish Bay, followed by 4 SEALs, one with a canine going to rappel out of a helicopter. We're blessed to have Admiral Harwood, who's going to give a great talk. The SEALs will be there to meet and greet. And, you know, I've been doing events and been on charity boards most of my life, and I think it's the most rewarding thing to dedicate these years to benefit these wonderful guys and also very fortunate to play these three great courses every year. So if you go to legendsinvitational.com, you'll see a million ways to be a sponsor or to participate in the event or to make a donation to help these guys, or we'll go to the Navy SEAL Museum.
So the dates are November 14th through the 17th. You're going to play 3 fantastic golf courses on the Monterey Peninsula, Pebble Beach, Spanish Bay, and Spyglass Hill. And, as you mentioned, one of the events is cocktails on the veranda while you watch these SEALs parachute in.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, I'm blessed to know Arnold Palmer and been obviously working with Pebble Beach for 20 years. We actually presented Arnold with a SEAL paddle, which is one of his most treasured possessions. If you go on the museum website or the Legends website, you'll see the letter from Arnold Palmer talking about the paddle, and even Arnold's excited. It's the first time in the history of Pebble Beach that SEALs or the military will parachute in for an event. So it's very fortunate. We have Izod as our title sponsor, Pure Insurance. We've got Jack Daniels, another great sponsor. We've got Titanium Industries, that's been working with the military for years. So if anybody out in your great listening audience is looking to sponsor a great event or support the Navy SEALs, we'd love to hear from you.
Well, John, we want to thank you so much for taking a few minutes to come on and talk to us today. And where can people go to find out more about this great tournament, and how can they help the Navy SEALs?
Oh, well, thank you so much for asking. You know, we have everything from houses with the museum that offer support to families, SEAL families, in times of distress. You know, you could do anything from join the museum to buy a brick to help build a house. There's a lot of wonderful ways to thank these great guys for their service to our wonderful country. And I'd welcome any and all support. Anyone that wants to sponsor the Legends or make a donation that can be auctioned off, we'd also welcome that. You can reach me, John Lee, at Legends Invitational. You'll see that on the website, and you'll see it on the Navy SEAL Museum as well. And just want to thank you, Fred, for the opportunity and the opportunity to reach your great audience.
So it's www.NavySEALMuseum.org, and the golf tournament is the Legends Invitational. There's a link on the Navy SEAL Museum website, or you can go directly to the legendsinvitational.com, make a donation. Maybe do you have some spots available yet if somebody wants to sign up to play?
You know, it's a great question. We have two foursomes left, and if there's any interest, love to have you. Now, next year will be the 25th, so if it's a little bit too late in the year for people to make that kind of a quick decision, the 25th Legends is next November 13th through the 16th. And proud to say one of the lovely things we're going to do also is auction off 25 white truffle dinners at the French Laundry. We're going to host a dinner at the French Laundry on November 12th of next year. So there are some of the finest people in America who are supporting these great guys, and I would welcome you to join us.
Appreciate it, John. I wish you all the best. I hope the tournament goes well, and if anybody's interested, hope they'll log on to NavySEALMuseum.org. Thanks again, John.
Thank you, Fred. Appreciate it very much.
There you have it. That was the interview with John Lee, President and CEO of the Legends Invitational Golf Tournament. So it sounds like a very good cost there and a great tournament and very enjoyable. So I think they're glad you guys all the information where to reach them.
Yeah, his goal is to raise $1 million from that event. Next year will be the 25th year. This is the 24th year for this event, and they have raised millions of dollars. He raises a lot of money every year, but he's really trying to raise at least $1 million in 1 year. He's also expanding. They're going to do other events around the country in the coming years. He's got an event coming up at Liberty National right there across the river from New York City. He's working with Arnold to maybe do something at Bay Hill. So he has some big plans. He's really heavily invested in the Navy SEALs and the Navy Museum, and sounds like he really puts a lot of time and effort into it.
And we wish him the best of success with the tournament. Hopefully he can get that $1 million. Everybody there, if you have something to give for auction, you heard it. You can send it there. Our second interview of the week is with George Miller. He's the executive vice president of Club Crown by Veeve. Club Crown, you know, they have a product called Stripe, which is a customized alignment aid that can be soft-installed on all metal woods by customers in just minutes. The Stripe is offered in more than 70 collegiate and military designs, plus many other exciting themes. And last week, they started to be sold on Amazon.com as well. So, Fred, lead us to this interview.
Yeah, Mr. Miller, who is the Vice President of Sales, was good enough to talk to us and tell us a little bit about Club Crown product, how it got started, and they've now evolved into the Club Crown Stripe, which is their new product. And looks like you can put that on by yourself. I made the mistake during the interview of mentioning it, referring it to as a decal. He didn't like that very much, so it's not a decal. It's something that you can apply on there. It stays on there much better. So, Carlos, go ahead and roll that.
Let's roll it.
We are here today with Mr. George Miller, who's the vice president of sales for Club Crown. He is a he's from Columbia, South Carolina, a graduate of Washington State University, and a U.S. Army Special Forces lieutenant colonel retired. Mr. Miller, thank you so much for talking to us today. How long have you been with Club Crown?
First off, thank you for having me. Been with Club Crown about a year and a half now.
What are you seeing there? What drew you to them? What's going on with the company?
The company, we're on a pretty good vertical climb. Andrew Glazer started the company with, the Club Crown, our premium product, about 3 years ago. We've been, rapidly growing all over the United States and international, trying to get the product out there, trying to get it known, been doing very well.
For those of the listeners that are not familiar with Club Crown, it is a decal that sticks or applies itself directly to your driver, fairway wood, or hybrid, and kind of dresses it up a little bit. You can pick your favorite team, a favorite color, favorite college, all kinds of different logos and things that you have that you can put on there, correct?
Yeah, we don't like to refer to it as a decal. Decals are kind of, just temporary things. It's actually a real high-quality 3M vinyl that is custom fit with a patented insulation process that we have to any driver, tree wood, or hybrid. We've got, many of the university licenses for the logos for the D1 schools. I mean, we've got almost the whole SEC and the ACC. We've got almost every country flag, for the Club Crowns themselves. And then a lot of just individual, what we call awesome animal prints, things like that. And then, we do custom for golf courses. We did for Pinehurst. We've done for other golf courses. They're custom logos. Individuals that want for tournaments or things like that, we can do custom for those too.
Oh, cool. So they can be easily applied. They're available in pretty much every conceivable style, color, and design. You can support your team, your school, or just customize your driver. And you can even have something customized for your course or your tournament or whatever you might want to do.
Yeah, it's pretty flexible as far as what we can do with it.
One size fits all, so any of your woods, your fairway woods, it will all work. Do you have any numbers? I'm just curious, what is the most popular or a couple of the more popular Club Crown designs that have gone out?
Yeah, we keep track of our top 20 sellers. The most popular probably is the American flag. We sell that quite a bit. The smiley face sells quite a bit. And then what we have is called our Black Widow collection. The Black Widow spider in multiple colors. We carry it in 5 colors, and that sells really well.
You want to put a smiley face on my driver? I'm usually one to break it. I don't want a smiley face looking back.
Ah, you put a smiley face on it, and then you're smiling after every shot. How can you get mad about a bad shot?
You can't have fun and play golf at the same time.
I
understand. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, and then, of course, the collegians are always real popular.
Sure. I understand Club Crown has come out with something new, the Club Crown Stripe. What was the idea behind that, and how does it work?
We have. The idea behind it is, as we went to more shows and outings, because the Club Crown itself has to be installed, so you have to be a certified installer. And, and even in our retail stores, we have installers in there. So many people kept asking, man, I'd like to take one of these home to my dad or to my brother. and we can't let them take Club Crown home because they can't install it. So we wanted to come up with something that was a self-install product that we could make it easy enough to where they could take it home, give it away as a gift, give them away in gift bags at golf tournaments. And so we developed the Stripe. And it's the width of a golf ball. And we've got them we've got about 60 SKUs right now in the Stripe, which is quite a few of them are the collegiate ones, because we launched it here in June, and just in time for the collegiate football season. And they're doing very well. We have a video online that you can watch that shows you how to put it on. There's instructions inside. Plus, we give you a practice club crown so you can practice it. And once it's on, it kind of becomes an alignment aid for you.
Yeah, that's one of the things that kind of helps you get lined up and make sure your club face is sitting square with the ball. And it's kind of like a line on the back of your putter. It kind of gives you help make sure that you're lined up correctly.
Exactly.
I'm looking at your website, www.clubcrown.com. There's also clubcrownstripes.com. And it says here you have over 40 colleges. I'm seeing here Nebraska, Oklahoma State, Florida Gators, Alabama. The most important one is the Ohio State Buckeye Leaf here, I see. LSU, you've got Georgia Tech, Auburn, Georgia, Tennessee. Looks like you got a pretty good variety to suit just about every college football fan out there.
Oh, yeah. We've actually, if you notice, there's two Ohio State. There's one with just the Buckeyes on it. And only Ohio State people really know what that is.
We know. We absolutely do know. Where can we find Club Crown? You got your website. We mentioned that. Where else can we find your Club Crown product?
Well, we're just starting to get to launch into getting out here into our retail shops. To get them out to the golf courses, getting them on the counters at the green grass, and mostly right now we've been online, but I would say within the next few months you'll start seeing them out on the counters in our retail shops.
I know at the driving range where I frequent, they've been on the counter there for some time, and they've been very happy with them. They've been doing quite well, so I think your response has been very good from what I hear, and it's just a way to maybe personalize your club a little bit, kind of be the Ian Poulter of your group and stand out a little bit.
Yep. And hopefully, we get into some of the bigger box stores here down the road, and next summer maybe we'll be able to start getting into maybe some of the NFL teams and things like that.
Well, Mr. Miller, we certainly want to wish you a lot of success. It's a very cool product. If you're tired of just looking at a plain white or plain black head on your driver or your woods, you can dress them up a little bit with any Club Crown products. You can find those at clubcrown.com or clubcrownstripes.com. Also, at some of the golf shops around, they're in retail locations all over. So, again, Mr. Miller, thanks a bunch for talking to us today, and we wish you a lot of success.
Appreciate the time. Thanks for having us.
There you have it. That was George Miller, the executive VP of Club Crown. So I know that Fred already endorsed the OFU Club Crown. Of course, he's more than happy that there are two of them. There no other college has two, so he's proud of that. I know that. But, hey, you know, it's a cool
thing. We're big spenders up here in Buckeye country, Carlos.
Hey, anything else you would like to add about the Club Stripe?
No, the Club Crown, the original product, you had to have a certified person put that on for you. So somebody at the course or somebody wherever you got that had to do it. So they wanted something where people could put it on themselves. And so that's really why they came up with the Club Crown Stripe. Anyone can put that on their club. It will fit any club, any fairway wood, hybrid or driver. So it just gives you that alternative, that flexibility to do that. It does look sharp. It really dresses your club up. It's a pretty nice deal. If you're looking, you know, if somebody's looking for a gift for another golfer or something, it makes a really great little gift.
There you have it. Remember, www.clubstripe.com. Hey, let's take a short break. When we come back, we're going to go to the practice range, and we have a lot to talk about. The World Golf Hall of Fame. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range where Fred and I will take our shots at the theme of the week, and the theme of the week is the World Golf Hall of Fame inductees for 2015. Last Wednesday, the fine folks who run the World Golf Hall of Fame announced the selection of 40 members as well as the most unique setting for the 2015 induction ceremony. They announced that its 2015 class will consist of named Laura Davis, Australian David Graham, American Mark O'Meara, and lead course designer Albert Warren, A.W. Tillinghast. This year's process was different from previous years because many golf writers were eliminated from the process, relying on a 16-member voting panel. Members of this panel included Arnold Palmer, Gary Player, Annika Sorenstam, Nancy Lopez, PGA Tour Commissioner Tim Fincham, and R&A Chief Peter Dawson, and three selected golf writers who, contrary to popular belief, no, Fred and I were not two of those three. So please stop writing to us. We were not involved in this. With these changes, the usual ceremonies around the week of the Players' Championship did not occur due to the process being reevaluated. A lot of outrage existed last year when Freddie Couples, with only one major win, and Colin Montgomery, no major victories, beat out Graham and O'Meara for the spots. Although the world of golf is happier to see Graham finally make it to the Hall of Fame, the issue this year is that Ian Woosnam was left off. You know, Woosnam, and I want to thank our colleague from eDraft, Kieran Clark, for sending me his stats, and I'm going to read them to you because I have them right here. You have to listen to this, okay? He's the 1991 Masters champion. He won 29 European Tour wins, 8-time Ryder Cup player, 2006 winning European Ryder Cup captain, world number one for 50 weeks, and the winner of the World Cup with Wales in 1987. Where's the love for Woozy? And don't get me started on Davis Love. Don't get me about Davis Love, you know, but hey, we'll see. Maybe he'll make it next time. Yet, as the world of golf gripes about this issue, you know, recognize that the process is getting better and enjoy the current celebration. Now, Graham had been waiting for a long time for this, and he's more than deserving. In his career, Graham finished his career with 8 career PGA Tour titles, 5 on the Champions Tour. His biggest win consists of the 1979 PGA Championship and the 1981 U.S. Open at Marion. His performance is still viewed as a benchmark for tournament golf. With this wins, Graham became the 4th Australian to win a major championship and the first to win the U.S. Open. O'Meara is most famously known for his run through the 1998 Tour. He finished with the wins at the Masters and the British Open Championship. O'Meara also went on to claim the PGA Player and Tour Player of the Year awards. Dame Davis may be less known compared to her counterparts, but she's undoubtedly the greatest English woman golfer of all time, and her impact has been just as important on the LPGA. She burst upon the scene on the latest European Tour in 1985. There she was both its Rookie of the Year and Golfer of the Year. Within the world of golf, Davis has won 84 tournaments, 4 majors, and also played for Europe in 12 Solheim Cup teams, and was named the Golf Writers Association of America Female Player of the Year 1994 and 1996. Interestingly enough, Davis would not have qualified for the old LPGA Hall of Fame at this time because of its numerical criteria. Four majors and 20 wins in America by that old standard that the LPGA has means that Davis would need either one more major or two more regular wins to make it. So numbers aside, congratulations to her Chiefs, where she truly belongs in the World Golf Hall of Fame. Tillinghast has been recognized for his world golf courses that he created throughout the United States in the early 20th century. One of his most famous sites includes Baltusrol Golf Club in Springfield, New Jersey, where Jack Nicklaus won two of his four U.S. Opens and Phil Mickelson won the U.S. Open in 2005. All in this is a solid class and well-deserved, given some of the recent Hall of Fames, though it's pretty clear that these aren't A-list Hall of Famers. You know, the World Hall of Fame necessarily didn't need it to get it right this time around with this new selection format, yet I'm sure many pundits will claim that the new foursome added to the Hall of Fame are most deserving. That being said, you know, I already talked about Wisdom, Davis Love. Also, with all due respect to Mr. Tillinghast, if we're talking about the impact they had on golf with their designs, how about Robert Trent Jones Sr. and Pete Dye are equally deserving candidates, maybe even more so. But, hey, finally, you know, the World Golf Hall of Fame and Museum will stage the 2015 induction ceremony in St. Andrews in Scotland in conjunction with the Open Championship rather than conducting it on-site in St. John's County. A release from the hall said the ceremony will be July 13th at the University of St. Andrews, just blocks from the old course, host of that week's 144th Open. So, Fred, all yours.
Yeah, you know, as you mentioned, this was the first time the new committee, they didn't induct anyone last year. There was such an outcry on the Freddie Couples induction that they felt they had to kind of step back and rethink the process a little bit. And, you know, I had written an article not too long ago asking, you know, why Laura Davies wasn't in the Hall of Fame. And lo and behold, she got inducted this year. They must have been listening. They must have been reading my my column. So yeah. But yeah, you know, I don't think they got anything wrong here. Yes, there are still some people out there that are deserving. I'll talk some more about that in a minute. But you know, all these people are really should have been in probably before this. So as you mentioned. Laura Davies, and we should probably call her Dame Laura Davies, because just like Sir Nick, she was recognized by the Queen and given that honor there just within the last month. She won golf tournaments around the world and has been one of the most dominant female athletes of all time. She has been the most recognizable golfer on the Ladies European Tour for over 30 years and holds a record for the most wins on the LET with 45 wins on that tour. And she pretty much single-handedly kept that tour together through most of the years. And they still love her over there. Even the young girls, when they're out on tour, they really respect Laura Davies, what she's done for the Ladies European Tour. And she's a rock star over there for sure. She added another 20 wins on the LPGA Tour, really kind of part-time. She played primarily in Europe. In addition, Davies won four major championships, six LPGA of Japan events, two Ladies Asian Tour events, eight titles on the Australian Ladies PGA, and seven other professional tournaments. So she won all around the world. She's been long overdue for enshrinement, and as you mentioned, because of the former format with the point system, the way the LPGA had it, the way the World Golf Hall of Fame had it, it was almost impossible for women to get in unless you won like six, seven majors or something. I mean, it was unbelievable. Mark O'Meara, you know, a solid player for a long, long time. He had the great year in 1998. He won the Masters and the Open Championship, and he came close to winning the PGA that year. A lot of people forget he finished tied fourth in 1998 at the PGA Championship. He was named PGA Tour Player of the Year and became a mentor to a young Tiger Woods when he turned professional in 1996. I've always thought that Tiger coming along and O'Meara mentoring him actually helped him bump his game up. He saw what Woods was capable of. They played together there at in Florida and at Windermere, and he felt he needed to bump his game up. And I think he learned as much or more from Tiger than Tiger learned from him. He also won around the world. He won 4 European Tour events. He won in Japan, so he's an international player on the Champions Tour. He has a couple wins, a lot of top 10 finishes. And even at the age of 57, he's still a factor on the Champions Tour. David Graham, born in Australia, won 20 golf tournaments around the world, holds trophies from tournament victories garnered from 6 different continents of the world. Only like Hale Irwin, Gary Player, and somebody else can match that statistic. He won 2 majors, the 1979 PGA Championship right up here at Oakland Hills in Detroit, and the 1981 U.S. Open at Marion. He fired a nearly perfect 67 in that final round. And as you mentioned, Carlos, that round, I remember watching every shot of that. I can still remember a lot of the shots today. I mean, he was almost flawless. You want to talk about a perfect round of golf, that was pretty much it that day. If you can get an old tape of that or go back and see it, he really played great. I think he hit every fairway, and I think maybe – I'm not sure if he hit every green. Maybe he just missed one or was on the fringe on one or something, but it was just nearly a flawless round of golf. He was also very successful in representing Australia in team events. He won the 1970 World Cup and the 1985 Alfred Dunhill Cup. You know, a lot of people don't realize that Graham played on the Seniors Tour. He had a good Champions Tour career, but in 2004 he passed out on one of the greens during a tournament, and he had a congestive heart failure right there, and so he ended his competitive career in 2004. And Tilly Hast, you know, what can you say? I don't know that I've had the pleasure to play a Tilly Hast course. I've watched a lot of them on television. There are some still played on the Champions Tour and on the regular tour from time to time. He designed over 265 golf courses around the U.S. and Canada, Baltusrol, Wingfoot, Bethpage, Ridgewood Country Club, just a few of the more famous tracks that are credited to Tilly Hast. His courses have hosted U.S. Opens and PGA Championships. He's most recognized for the variety found from course to course. You know, a lot of these guys, a lot of the architects, when you play one golf course, you know, if you play another one, you see the same holes. Not with Tilly Hast. He used what the contour of the ground gave him, and that's how he designed the course. He especially appreciated the use of trees to delineate a golf hole and create sight lines and create options for the player. He also put great emphasis on the green complexes of each course. Always aware of the natural drainage, he felt greens needed to be well guarded but receptive to the properly played shot. It appears the new committee, Carlos, in this new format of choosing candidates for induction in the World Golf Hall of Fame, kind of has worked as planned. Nobody's really complaining too much about these choices this year, and all of the 2015 inductees are deserving of the honor of being in the Hall of Fame, and they have distinguished themselves throughout their golfing careers. So just to make real mention, a couple guys that still aren't in. You mentioned Ian Woosnam. He absolutely has the credentials. He's got to be in the next class, I would certainly think. Here's some names that maybe you hadn't thought about. You know, we mentioned how hard it was for women to get in. Jan Stevenson, 3 major wins, 16 LPGA Tour wins, and she brought sexy to the LPGA Tour and got it on the covers of magazines, in the newspapers. She really helped promote the LPGA Tour when she came on to it. So she won in Japan, she won the Ladies European Tour, she won in Australia. Jan Stevenson should be a candidate for the Hall of Fame. Meg Mallon, 4 majors, 18 LPGA Tour wins, Solheim Cup, all that kind of stuff. A couple guys that probably just not quite good enough. Lee Jansen has 2 majors, both of them U.S. Opens. 8 PGA Tour wins, Andy North, 3 PGA Tour wins, two of which were U.S. Open. So both those guys with a couple U.S. Opens, but really nothing much more to show for it. Davis Love, just one major, bunch of LPGA Tour wins. He might get in someday, you know, based on his whole body of work, Ryder Cups and all that kind of stuff, World Cups with Freddie Couples. So, you know, there's probably hope for Davis Love yet. He just turned 50. He's got another 3, 4, 5 years yet that he can probably get in. But my biggest faults were Colin Montgomery, who finally got inducted in 2013, and Laura Davies getting inducted this year. I felt those were the two biggest injustices out there. And now that Kieran's kind of pointed out Ian Woosnam to us, and when I was doing research today, I'd stumbled upon his name even before I saw the note from Kieran. So Woosnam's got to get in. But I'm telling you, other than that, Carlos, there's just not a lot of names there right now for induction into the World Golf Hall of Fame going forward.
I would only like to add to that, like you mentioned, there was a very difficult for women to get in, but I would like to add Dear McMahon. I think that McMahon is very deserving, 19 professional wins, you know, four majors also on the LPGA, so, and also her work as well on the Solheim Cup. So I think she's very well deserving. And how about something from the past, someone from the past like Samuel Ryder? Okay, you know, I think that his work and his impact on the world of golf is really, really felt, and I think that he should be deserving just trying to get all those old people from the past, trying to get them in. So, like you mentioned, I have to agree. I don't think there's much to go with, but, hey, I think overall you're deserving class. Like you mentioned, there's not much debating on it. And just want to remind everybody, we were not two of those three writers there in the committee. So, Fred, do you have anything else to say before we take our final thoughts for the day?
I've got some other quick news items here. If we want to cover them now, Carlos, or if you want to, or if you want me to do them on the way out.
No,
go ahead.
Do them now. We're going to go ahead for our final thoughts, so you can get yours right now. Go ahead.
Just a note to everybody, the Asia Pacific Amateur Golf Championship is on this week. It'll be airing on ESPN2. Because of the time difference, it's down at Royal Melbourne down in Australia this year. It starts Wednesday evening. That'll be the first round. It's Thursday down there. So 11:30 p.m. on ESPN2, not the Golf Channel, ESPN2. So if you want to set your DVRs and maybe watch that the next day. So it's on Wednesday at 11:30 p.m., Thursday at 11:30 p.m., Friday it comes on at 9 p.m. for the third round, and Saturday at 9 p.m. to watch it live. So Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday night is the Asia Pacific. And of course, you know, we've seen the great amateurs come out of there. Hideki Matsuyama won it a couple years. We know what he's done. Guan Tin Lang, the 14-year-old that made it into the Masters. So the winner gets a trip to the Masters, so it's a big deal. Peter Dawson is retiring from the RNA as chief executive next year. Martin Slumbers has been named to succeed Dawson next month. Dawson has done a lot of stuff. Evidently feels like his job is complete with the addition of women members to the RNA and the banning of the long putters coming in 2016. The European Tour announces 2015 schedule this year. This week. Excuse me. And I know LPGA Tour Commissioner Juan was happy to announce the new sponsor for the International Crown, but he had to be downright giddy with the fact that Michelle Wee returned to action this week in Korea. After a poor first round 76, she shot 67-67 on the weekend to finish T5 at 8 under par. Wee looks like she's ready to finish the season strong and will add a shot of excitement to the remaining tournaments left in Asia before returning to the LPGA Tour, before it returns to Mexico and the U.S. here at the in a couple weeks. The European Tour announced a new tournament, in Thailand. $2 million is going to come back in Thailand next year after an eight-year absence. And also Ian Poulter stirring up a little controversy with his new book, No Limits. He took a shot at Sir Nick Watson. Sir Nick Faldo. So it's nice to see that the European Ryder Cup people are having a little dissension in the ranks. It's just not all with the U.S.
Oh, we have just 30 seconds to go, so I'm just going to go right away to what I was going to say right away with Rory McIlroy. He's taking a break from tournament golf to focus on his legal situation with Horizon Sports Management. He's going to skip the European Tour's BMW Masters at the end of October and the WGC HSBC Champions the second week of November. He'll be back for the final two tournaments of the Euro Tour's Race to Dubai, and we'll talk later about what he has now facing next February with his case, because it will affect his schedule. Welcome back, Niner fans. That wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIGs, John Lee and George Miller. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Block Talk Radio. And also to tune in. If you haven't done so, follow the show and also on Twitter. Our ID is at Back Nine Report. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Albader. Be happy and be blessed and enjoy the game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.